You're listening to Oh Shit, What Now? The only podcast with two entrepreneurial mom friends with nine, yes, nine sons between them. We'll tackle topics from raising our little monsters, I mean, darlings, to running our businesses. Your hosts are Shannon Fletcher, the mom of five, and Dorothy Kolb, the mom of four. Join us each episode as we dig in and open up some space to explore being a working parent, whether you're an entrepreneur or not. So, this is the first episode of Oh Shit, What Now? And Shannon and I are here today with Jamie Lieberman. And Jamie, why don't you give us a little introduction about yourself personally and what you do for a living?
So, thank you for having me. I don't think I've ever been the first guest on any podcast. So,
yay!
I feel like that's a great honor. So, thank you.
Oh, it is a good honor. Oh, you're welcome.
So my name is Jamie Lieberman. I am a lawyer. So don't stop listening because you heard that. I'm a fun lawyer. I'm a lawyer. I'm an entrepreneur. I own my own law practice called Hashtag Legal. I am a mom of two boys. I am married to a lawyer. I know. Wow. We are just so fascinating.
Wow. Nothing's getting past you guys. That one thing.
A lot of negotiation in our household.
Yeah.
I live in Hoboken, New Jersey. A true Jersey girl over here. I've been practicing law for 16 years. So for the first half of my career, I was in big law and the federal government. And then I started my own practice exactly when, right after I had my first baby, which is an amazing time to start a business.
Yes. You're feeling so stable about yourself and the world. It's perfect.
It was amazing. And then I added another child while I was continuing to launch that business. Also a really smart thing to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But now we're in the good phase now, though. My kids are no longer babies and neither is my business.
How old are your sons?
So my oldest is 10 and my youngest is 7.5. So nice. Second grade and fifth grade.
Oh, aww, man. Those fun ages.
Best Shannon, years.
Nolan's 10, right?
Yes. He just turned 11 in September. So he's feeling all of his 11.
Excellent.
I feel like they feel all of whatever they are.
Yes. Like they embrace it entirely. I have twins who are 19, a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old. So that's my pack of wolves.
I have Connor's 23. I have two 19-year-olds, one that's almost 17, and then an 11-year-old.
So
yeah, all phases of child development are covered all the time.
Love it. I know.
Absolutely. And while I started my entrepreneurship not when my kids were small, I totally get going through that. And I think Shannon, you did that when you had Nolan, right?
Yeah, when they were babies. I mean, I was pregnant with Jackson when I was full on in my first selling the modular homes. And I remember wearing like the big heeled boots, big pregnant, like it was the summer of the locusts. Do you remember that? When they really were out in Maryland and they would get stuck in my hair. You don't remember?
I wasn't here. That was Brood 10, wasn't it? Like,
oh, yeah. That was that before your time in Maryland. Right. Okay. So see how we're going off on our own tangent. I'm into locusts and high heels and let's go back to Jamie. See how it's going to go down.
Jamie, what was your biggest challenge? If you can pick a biggest one for when you first started your business, being a new mom, being a career woman, and an entrepreneur from both sides, what were the two biggest challenges?
So I'm going to wrap them all up into one word. And to me, that's identity.
Wow.
So when you have your first child, I feel like your identity just completely shifts and changes. And you go from being where I did rather than saying you, but I do feel like this may resonate with some other people listening. I went from being Jamie Lieberman, lawyer, wife, fun friend.
All around good time.
Yeah. New Yorker, because I lived in New York City at the time, which any New Yorker, that is, maybe that's like the first part of your identity, if you're being honest.
Yeah.
To suddenly eclipsing all the identities as mom. And take that with going back. I went back to work at my sort of corporate-ish job after I had my first son. And it was about 8 months in where I'm like, yeah, this is not going to work. And so I had this like epic identity crisis of mom comes before everything, when really lawyer came before anything. And all of a sudden thinking to myself, am I going to be a lawyer? Am I going to stay a lawyer? Will this succeed? What does that business look like? Who am I? What does, you know, so for me,
like, that, yeah,
all of the identity. And you don't even know, I didn't know that's really what I was grappling with. I just know I felt all the big feelings of being a new mom, trying to juggle it, trying to reach that elusive balance, which is just a load. I know we curse on this, so I'm going to say a load of bullshit.
A load of bullshit.
Yeah.
Were you young when you had your sons, or were you like in your 30s? Because I started
35.
I had Max at 31 and it rocked my world. I thought I could be a big girl, but I was not ready for being the full woman that I had to become.
Yeah. In some ways, I feel like because my identity had been so fully formed, which isn't to say that if you have children younger, your identity is not. But I will say, me personally, if I would have had my kids at 25, my identity was, I hadn't even gone to law school yet at 25.
Right,
so my identity was not, my personal identity was not even remotely formed at 25. I had no idea who I was. But by 35, I was hitting my stride and groove. And then all of a sudden I had a baby.
That's exactly how it felt. Oh my goodness.
I was also 34 when I had my twins, and it just knocked you, especially with twins too. Like, you just really, like, I've got nothing else. And I remember I tried to go back to work for a little bit and it didn't work for a few months. I was like, nope, not happening. And then
were you doing that at that point, Dorothy?
I was a CPA. I don't do taxes, have never done taxes. I was a CPA, but I was working at a firm in San Luis Obispo, California, and they were super great. They ended up putting me, they didn't let me go. You know, I didn't quit. They put me on projects when I could get them done and everything. But there's no way I could go in and work at a client pumping, could sit in my car and put like wind shades up and stuff and plug it into the, it was awful. And then when I decided, okay, this isn't going to work, I have to stay home, I fully embraced that, went to all the, you know, mommy and me things. I became president.
You become super mom, right?
I became president of the Central Coast Moms of Multiples, all this stuff. But then that's all, my whole life was all that. And when I wasn't doing that with women who were exactly in the same space I was home. And it was like super isolating. I was so homogenized with these women who all they could talk about was, oh, my kid crawled or talked or ate this or whatever.
Yeah.
Or sitting home by myself with two kids who like were not very conversational. And I was just so yearning for anyone to talk to me about something other than my kids or their kids.
Yeah. And I would feel guilty that it wasn't enough. Like, why do I have to search outside of myself? And it's that identity thing that Jamie's talking about. I think once you have that first one, you're constantly searching for the identity you have. And the truth is, it's not there anymore.
No. And you can't ever get that identity back. But what you can do, I think, is through phases of life, I think our identities frequently change, shift, morph because we change.
Right.
And once you add mom into that identity, so many moms assume that's my only identity now. That's it. I'm mom now. That didn't work for me either.
Yeah.
For some people it does. And that's awesome. But if it doesn't work for you, I'd certainly also felt a lot of shame around the fact that I had the privilege of being able to quit my job because I was very similar. I went back about 8 months. I did not have the most welcoming of work environments. And that was certainly very challenging. And I had a very challenging birth story. And so it was very emotional for me to go back to work. And so when I left, I had the option of not working. And I got to tell you, my mom, who's obviously of a very different generation, is like, that's a dream. You're living the dream. And I'm looking at her. And so then I'm getting these messages like, you have the dream. You have everything. And I'm like, I have never felt more miserable at the thought of not having anything but being a mom. And I feel very grateful about being a mom and I love my kid and et cetera. So it took me 3 or 4 years to really piece together what I was going to do and how I was going to do this. And it's ever changing because it's always so interesting to me. Like when your kids are super little, you think this is the hardest thing you've ever done. And in some ways it is, and their needs change, but the level of need never really changes till they're much, much older. But those needs to me, as my kids are getting older and moving into like tween and all of that, like those needs feel so much more complicated and emotional and versus you know, your basic needs of my kid fed, dry, sleeping, which feel like the end of the world, but you can't realize that when you're navigating like bullying or social media or like these things are just to me.
We don't want to ruin the story for you with teenagers.
Yeah, no, I know. Believe me, I had my kids later in life. So many of the people I grew up with, their kids are going to college or they're in college. So I'm living it through those friends and knowing like, I know what kind of teenager I was. Thank God there wasn't social media. Oh
my God. That's what I'm saying. Oh my God, these kids, like, stop putting it out there. But it's a whole generation now that accepts that it's out there.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
And I think it's almost, it's worse than they have it out there. It's they're expected to.
Yes.
Like their friends had give them a hard time if it's not. Like one of my twins, Ethan, was off social media entirely. He went through a very depressed time in his life, his last year of high school. And just, he barely used his phone. He just kind of cut all that stuff out. And then when he finally started getting social again, all of a sudden those apps start showing up back on his phone and all. But it's their way to connect. And they really don't realize you can still like actually speak to someone.
Speaking to connection, like Jamie mentioned, she had a difficult birth story. How nice would it have been? I don't know if you had this. If you went through that, to have a group of moms, maybe, that you could have talked to about that. Because when I had my kids, there was no like Facebook groups. I didn't even have Facebook, or my cell phone, I think, was still the big clunker. But there is a connection piece that maybe social media can help with. So was your birth story really something you want to talk about? Or?
Oh, it's crazy. So my oldest son decided to make his appearance when we were on vacation in Hawaii.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. He was like, wow, this is a beautiful place. I should be born here. So fast forward, he is wonderful, fine. We certainly dealt with delays because he was quite early. He is the picture of health, thank goodness, now.
Right.
But we traveled to Hawaii when I was 29 weeks pregnant. And I went into labor at 30 weeks in Maui, which is not where you want to go into early term labor. And we ended up getting airlifted to Honolulu, to a wonderful hospital, which I'll give a shout out to, Kapi'olani Medical Center, where President Obama was born.
Oh, nice.
And they tell you that every single time when you're in there. It's so far, they're so proud. They're like, and he lived in that apartment. You can see it. It was very funny. But as it turns out, for anybody listening, Kapi'olani Medical Center turns out to be one of the best hospitals in the country for preterm labor and premature babies.
Wow. So you were meant to be there.
No idea. And so I actually ended up being on bed rest in the hospital in Honolulu for 4 weeks. He did come at 34 weeks, thank goodness. So he was still early, but not 30 weeks, which would have been, frankly, much more catastrophic and challenging. And so that was quite the story. And it was really emotional.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it's wild. And he's very proud. He thinks he's Hawaiian. I was like, nope, you're Jewish and from New Jersey. You're not.
I was going to say, I bet you he gets a lot of like street cred with his friends. Oh, you're Hawaiian? Oh,
I love telling the story. It's very funny. It's interesting you say that. I found at that time, obviously, I felt very isolated, thousands of miles away from anybody that we knew. The people who worked at that hospital are still our friends, and we still keep in touch with them because they were just such literal angels. And our friends and family, like when you go through a crisis like that, something so epically scary and you're so far away, our community just rallied for us. We knew the FedEx and UPS guy. Like we were getting packages every single day. The nurses loved it because people were sending us so much food. And we were just,
awesome.
We couldn't eat it all because there's two of us. And I was, you know, so sick. But my friends of friends would show up at the hospital. Like it turned out that like we had a coworker whose niece was who lived in Honolulu and she was visiting and just had a baby. And like just people we didn't even know. It was an amazing, really incredible story of community.
That is neat.
Yeah. I love your story. I know that it's probably super emotional, but that It really shows you in crisis how people just pull it together for you when you don't expect it.
But the amazing thing is those came from true personal connections. Social media for me was actually really toxic because if you went on social media and you searched premature birth or you would have jumped out the window. It was just so negative and so painful. Yeah. And I understand that everybody processes in different ways, but like my needs at that time were not hearing all the bad stories. I needed to hear the success stories or no stories.
FedEx boxes.
I needed those personal. Exactly. Yeah. And then when we eventually got home, there is a wonderful group that meets, like a new mom group that meets at our local hospital. And that was a wonderful experience. I made a lot of friends, people I'm still in touch with now, 10 years later. And that truly was the connection. I am an in-person connection kind of person. I struggle to live online, be online, want to connect online. I love the energy of other humans. So in that time I found, so I'm very encouraging of that, obviously, with my kids as well. My kids are too young and do not have any social media. We've made a very strong, oh no, you say that, but my kids' friends have TikTok and YouTube and
they love, a lot of people love putting their kids on those things too, because they're cute or whatever. And, you know, I think it's such a great message, even for the younger moms out there or women that are listening, thinking about having kids or whatever. These are great things to think about now before you have the kids. Stay off the social media or only search for certain things, because there's a big shift, I think, happening. Dorothy, with your sons, if you're seeing it, because I'm seeing it with my older ones, they're shifting away from the circus of it all, which is what it starts to feel like for these kids. But
yeah, actually, both my twins, they are not big social media people at all. And then Ryan and Jack, who are 17 and 14, they're on it, but they don't like, they're not like big, heavy posters and TikTokers and all that kind of stuff. They just are for you. They're like, oh, let's see what everybody else is doing. As you were talking, I was thinking it's interesting because if you think back to when like we were kids, you know, you had what, television, print, or radio. And it wasn't like anybody forced you. I mean, we watched TV because it was like in the living room or whatever. But now there's so much more pressure around being involved with that. And I guess it's because it's not a passive activity, but it's just interesting because there's sort of, you have somebody going, oh my God, you didn't read the Baltimore Sun. What is wrong with you?
It reminds me a little bit of when I was a teenager in high school and we were all discovering music. And if you'd be like, did you hear this REM at the time? I remember REM came out with a new album when I was in high school, and which that's how old I am.
Well, look, we're with you. We were probably in college or out of college when that came out, because I kind of remember that.
But I remember it was such a big deal. And I remember a whole bunch of my friends, we went to the mall and stood in front of Sam Goody and just listened to the REM album. And that was a status symbol that we got to go to the mall and listen to the REM album. So in some ways it reminded me of music, because if someone's, oh my God, have you heard of this band? And you hadn't, you were like, oh my God, I got to figure out who that band is. How do I find out?
Well, do you remember how mortified the adults were when MTV hit the waves and like kids were just sitting there for hours watching videos? I remember hearing it like, oh my God, oh, that's all they do is listen to the music videos and watch them. And I remember being younger, like trying to figure out what the heck's going on MTV.
Now there is no music on MTV.
Yeah, no, we have come like a full circle of birth stories, MTV, careers. I love this.
I know.
I love this.
You know what? I was just looking at my notes for this and I'm like, this is a really good question that I've actually asked myself a lot. And it depends on the day what kind of answer I give. But we always think about what grade you'd give yourself as a parent, as a mom. And I parallel that with what grade do I give myself in my professional life? And they don't match. And I'm just curious what you think yours are and which way they skew, like which one is higher or lower, or do they shift?
So they shift. You know, we mentioned the balance is bullshit theory, which I think is 100% true. I cannot be good at both. I think I honestly have to pick and choose. And sometimes things are chill enough that I can. So I'm like on a pass fail scale, an A through F. If I'm passing both, I'm like, yes. Winning. So the goal is to pass.
65 both. Is passing.
That's what I'm saying. To pass the bar, you need like a D. So let's go there.
70 for the CPA exam. So I'm with you.
So, you know, I'm essentially trying to pass both. And in an ideal world, like we're not in crisis. So passing is cool. And it really just depends on who needs what more, whether it's the work or the kids. But I'll say this, like if my kids are in crisis, there is nothing at work that's going to trump that. So my kids are always going to tip the balance when they need it. And it's really the assessment, like, are we in crisis or can we get through or what is this? They're never equal. Like right now, my kids, this week has just been a crazy busy week with lots of like meetings and appointments and things. And so like the work feels like it's suffering a bit because I'm pretty focused on doing some stuff with my kids. So next week, I'm going to have to shift that balance and I'm going to have to be really focused really hard on work, and the kids may, you know, not get as much of my attention. If I try to be everything to everyone all the time, I'll jump out of a window. It's just not, it's an unfair standard. It's impossible. And that's really why it's silly saying it takes a village is so true. Like, you just have to ask for help. This week, I went to the staff of my law firm. I'm like, hey guys, I just need you to pitch in a little bit more. And I went to one of my lawyers and I was like, I was going to handle these three things. I just need you to handle it. And I'm going to put eyes on it and send it out, because otherwise it's going to be 3 a.m. and I'm going to be working on it. And that's not acceptable.
Right. I read something recently that the whole idea of superwoman and creating superwoman, it's such a kind of slap in the face to women, in that it sends the message that you are expected to do all of these things and do them well. Like, superheroes don't have any help. You don't need any help either. And that's such a bad bar to set for yourself, because you can't do it. It's impossible. I said with my kids, it's just not your year to have a crisis. It's this kid's year. Okay. I heard it someplace. I'm sure I heard it somewhere, but I use it with my kids. This is not your year. Stop it. That last year was your year. And you know who I'm talking about, Dorothy.
And if you look at superheroes too, what do they get to do? They get to hang up their alter ego and just go be the superhero. And nobody says, yeah, but you didn't do all this other stuff. It's, oh, Clark Kent and Superman aren't even the same person. So there's no expectation that he'll do his newspaper job really well as being super. So that's just crazy. Thinking of that balance is bullshit. Moderated a panel back in May, and one of the women was talking about how it's not a balance, but a harmony. And I thought that was really interesting. She's an entrepreneur. There was another woman on the panel who was a corporate employee, and she was like, no, it's got to be a balance. It's one or the other. It can't be both, because you can't bring your kids to the office, kind of thing. But I was like, harmony. Yeah, that's really interesting, because it intertwines. It's never that you just get to knock one off or knock the other off. And so I was like, oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's always changing. And I personally think just having, I always say this to my husband, I was like, you need to give whoever or yourself some grace. Like, you just have to have a moment of like, where you're going to give some grace, and I'm going to realize like, that's not going to be perfect, and that's okay. And we're just going to figure out how we're going to get through whatever's happening right now. Because I would say 9 times out of 10, it all flows together. We get it done. We figure it out. Some weeks are harder than others, and we're passing on both most weeks, where we're like, all right, yeah, I'm doing this. I can do this. And then the thing happens, right? You're like, oh, like, for example, I mean, this sounds really silly, but it is something perfect. We got an email from my kid's school that next week they have a half day with no aftercare because of parent-teacher conferences. And so for my oldest, it doesn't matter. He does his own thing. But for the little one, I can't leave him the entire day, and it's not fair to them. And so now all of a sudden we're like, what the what?
Yeah. What am I supposed to do?
Look at our like, schedules literally. And we're like, we're both jam-packed with meetings. And I would love to take a half a day with my kids and hang out with them and take them to the park and do all those things. But that's not in the cards for me for that week, because I have a lot of commitments already. So we called grandma and grandpa.
The village.
Lucky enough, we're free. Yeah, the village, right? And so it's stuff like that where it's, so you get that hiccup and you're like, all right, how are we going to handle this? What are we going to do? And so we also let that roll off our back. I have a lot of guilt that I'm not taking that half day with the kids and hanging out with them and doing the things that a lot of the other parents may be able to do, because either they can take that half day off of work, or maybe they don't work, or whatever it is. And so I wish I could, but I also know that in November, when my kids have off for Election Day and Veterans Day and Teachers Convention and Thanksgiving, I know that we've booked a trip and we're going to take the kids away, and we're definitely taking Thanksgiving. I just have to give myself the grace to know that, like, it's okay. Yeah. They're going to
be fine.
And
they don't remember. No. That's the kicker. They don't remember it accurately the way it happened. They remember the highlights and the lowlights. And if you can keep the lowlights to a minimum, that's all they're going to remember. And I think we kill ourselves with guilt. You just said how guilty you feel. We kill ourselves over and over with the guilt. They're not even going to remember what we feel guilty about.
You know what my kids remember? My kids remember when we like laid on the couch and read a book together at night. My kids remember that I made them chocolate chip pancakes for dinner, and that was like the best moment. That's what they remember. They remember when they said, hey, mom, can you shut off the computer right now and do this with me? And I'm like, yeah, they remember that. And so I just, yeah, I try to remind myself that I'm present when I'm present. That's the other thing. I'm not multitasking. When I'm home, I'm home and it gets shut off. And even if it means that when they go to bed, I'm flipping it back on. But when I'm home, I'm home. So I am present with them. They're having dinner. We're talking. We're going over homework. We're talking about the day. That, I think, is a big part of what I'll call balance or harmony, whatever word we want to use, is wherever you are, you're there. And so when I'm at work, I'm at work. And when I'm at home, I'm at home. And I used to try to multitask. I could have the laptop open and I'd write an email and then I'd make dinner. And I'm like, what? This is crazy. My kids are seeing me not paying attention to anything. And so I stopped doing that. And that was a really big eye opener for me.
I do love that. I was lamenting on Facebook a while back about, especially with my youngest one, more than anything, because I got pregnant with him 4 months after I went back to work. And I felt like I took him to work with me for the first few months. I, you know, had him in the office. People passed him around. He's just KSBYTB baby. Once I really had to just engage in being back to work and all, this is within the last year, right? So I gave myself a full like 12, 13 years muddle is around in my head. And I was like, gosh, I feel really bad. I don't feel like I'm there for him because I go to work early in the morning, come back late at night. And then my ex wasn't super great about the doing homework and all that stuff with him. So I would try to get that done. Then they go to bed at like 7:30, 8 o'clock. I was like, oh, and I posted something about that. And the nanny that I had when I was out there, immediately, like seconds later, I don't think she ever gets off Facebook. Sorry, Christina. She said, wait a minute. You used to have hooky days where you would take off a day, like once per quarter or whatever it was, and just spend the whole day with one of your kids, not all four of them, just one. They'd get mom for the entire day. And she said, it might not sound like a lot, but you were able to do that. And they remembered that and they had great times.
I bet you forgot all about that.
Of course. And they're like, oh, yeah, the hooky days. Of course.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah.
See, we're such good moms.
This is like therapy. I have a good friend that calls this affirmation time. Like when you text your friends and you're like, I don't like this dress. Like, how does it look? And they're all like, you are beautiful.
You look like a goddess.
You are fierce.
I have a few friends like that.
Yeah, affirmation time.
I used to do that texting a couple of my friends back here on the East Coast when I lived out in California. And I'd be like, I can't do this. You know, being home with the kids, I can't. And they'd be like, you made it till 11 o'clock. If you can just make it till 12, you could have a glass of wine. Everybody's still alive and it's 11 a.m. You're good.
Everybody needs affirmation time.
Yes. A tribe of women.
Yeah, it's funny. My mom used to say that she passed away earlier this year, but she very much way the youngest. She was 35 when she had me. So she was in a very different generation. And she didn't work until I went back to high school. We had these conversations about women's rights and all that stuff. And of course, she was like firmly in the, you just stayed home, had kids. You don't have your own credit card. You don't have your own bank account, like all that. And she was like, she felt bad for me having all those opportunities, because she was like, in a way, it was a lot simpler because the only job I was allowed to have was being your mom. And now there are all these other opportunities, which are fantastic. And she was jealous of that. But at the same time, she was like,
it makes it complicated.
It makes it super complicated.
But it also is like an escape route for some women that didn't have it so great with no other options. You know what I'm saying? I know my grandmothers they had good lives. But I know both of them were the biggest reason that I wanted to finish college, because they're like, you know what? Education. My one grandmother was like, education is something no one can take from you. You get your degree. Yes. And they had good lives, but they knew that they had no other choices. And they both lived to be quite old and happy. So I don't know what that says, but they knew that if they had other choices, maybe they would have felt differently about things. But it brings it back to your point, Dorothy, that we do have complicated social, what's the word I'm looking for? Just societal requirements and pressures that make it complicated for us to feel like a whole woman. Because a whole woman now means a whole lot. It means something much different than a whole woman back when your mom was going.
In the 50s and 60s and stuff, of course. The whole mom just meant you made cookies on, you know, when you were supposed to. And
okay, so now I'm depressed again. So let's talk about something. Let's bring it back. Let's bring it back. No, I'm kidding.
Okay, no, I will. Actually, I'm going to ask you, as we're nearing towards the end of this interview, What advice would you give to moms who are in this space right now, or even as Shannon said, maybe women who are thinking about getting into this whole mom thing, and they're like, now they're either terrified because they listened to us for the last half hour, or their ovaries are screaming and they want to do it anyway.
Like, they're like, these women are crazy. We can do it. If these two chicks hosting the show can do it, all right, the attorney seems reasonable. Those two hosts, if they did it, I could do this.
All right. But yeah, no, Jamie.
I love that the attorney seems reasonable. No one has ever said that to me. My advice would be is figure out what works for you, because it's not what works for your friend or your mom or the random person on Facebook. And don't worry about what works for everybody else. You got to figure out what is good for you.
And friends, I think, will understand, right? Well, like, your tribe,
they shouldn't care.
Understand.
Right. They shouldn't care. It's none of their business.
Right.
They should be your affirmation time. Unless, obviously, if you're doing something that feels destructive or is concerning to a friend, obviously, that's a different story. I'm just talking about when you sit down, whether you have a partner or do not, whatever the case may be, who is in that small circle when making the decision to have children, I think you have to decide what works for you and not worry about what anyone else thinks. Don't do it for your mom. Don't do it for your friend. Don't do it for your partner. Don't do it for your ex-partner.
Thanks for that late advice.
I know. But don't think about what it has to be what's going to work for you. Otherwise, you're going to be miserable. And there's too many pieces of advice out there that are like, do it this way, or you have to be this, or you don't have to be anything you don't want to be. And so that, I think there's a feeling of safety, I guess, when your friend's like, oh yeah, I get that. I did that too. And it worked out really well. And I understand wanting to seek that out. But I think limiting the number of voices that really have an impact on your decision-making is really key to the right people who are going to be there to challenge you when you need to be challenged and support you when you need to be supported. But too often we make our circles way too large for people who are trusted or someone who's going to influence something that you're doing. And so I think that just really knowing yourself, it's why I had a baby. I didn't wait until I was 35. So while I certainly had that identity crisis, I didn't know myself well enough to have babies any sooner than that. And frankly, I could have waited a little longer if biology wasn't a part of it.
But I'm the most reasonable at 50. And like, it's no.
Yeah, no. I'm in my mid 40s and I know myself better than I've ever known myself. And frankly, I give less craps about what anyone else thinks. So there's value to that. But frankly, that could be literally at any phase from like the time you're a child all the way up through is just limiting people who have an influence and really just focusing on what do I need? What do I want? What's going to work best for myself and my family?
I like that. I love that. I know.
That's a great way to wrap that up.
It is. Thank you so much for being our first guest and the inaugural episode. Is there someplace, a website or something that people can follow you on or social media now that we have bashed social media for the last 30 minutes? But if someone's interested in following you or reaching out, where can they find you?
Sure. So my law firm is called Hashtag Legal, which is very easy to remember. And the website is spelled out hashtag-legal.com. And we're also on Instagram, #spelledout_legal. That's probably the best place. I have a YouTube channel as well, Jamie Lieberman Rocks, where we just post. Yeah, we talk a lot about legal issues, but we also talk about entrepreneurial and business issues as well. Because when you've been practicing law as long as I have, and when you've been working with entrepreneurs for as long as I have, you have a lot of stories. I try to share just like the experiences, obviously protecting all the important details, but we try to just share like little pieces of information and just like anecdotes so that you can recognize, oh, wow, that's happening to me. And maybe I should talk to a lawyer, or maybe I need a little bit of support around that. Or maybe I don't feel as alone anymore because this happens to lots of entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I understand that from the financial space as well, because I come up with the same stuff.
And we try to be fun about it.
Yes.
I'm not, when people meet me or see me, they're like, wow, you're a lawyer. I don't really act or talk or like your typical lawyer. So
perfect first guest.
Perfect. Love it.
That's why I had to get out of traditional legal practice and just make my own, because there was no space for someone like me to practice. So,
right. That's awesome.
Love it. Thanks so much. And we're glad that you were here.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe so you won't miss an episode of Oh Shit, What Now? And don't forget to connect with us on socials and rate our podcast.